Chapter 76, The Last Chapter. August 13, 1989, New York City. Sal Cascio was waiting in the vast lobby of the World Trade Center when Pitt came slowly through the entrance. Cascio looked at him in stark appraisal. He couldn't remember when he'd seen a man so near the edge of physical collapse. Pitt moved with the tired shuffle of a man who had endured too much. He wore a borrowed foul-weather jacket two sizes too small. His right arm hung slack while his left was pressed against his chest, as if holding it together, and his face was etched in a strange blending of suffering and triumph. The eyes burned with a sinister glow that Cascio recognized as the fires of revenge. "I'm glad you could make it," Cascio said without referring to Pitt's haggard appearance. "It's your show," said Pitt. "I'm only along for the ride." "Only fitting and proper we should be together at the finish." "I appreciate the courtesy. Thank you." Cascio turned and guided Pitt over to a private elevator. Pulling a small push-button transmitter from his pocket, he punched the correct code and the doors opened. Inside was an unconscious guard who was bound with laundry cord. Cascio stepped over him and opened a polished brass door to a circuit panel with the words "Liftonic Elevator QW607 engraved on it. He made an adjustment in the settings and then pushed the button that read 100. The elevator rose like a rocket, and Pitt's ears popped three times before it slowed, and the doors finally opened onto the richly furnished anteroom of Bougainville Maritime Lines, Incorporated. Before he stepped out, Cascio paused and reprogrammed the elevator circuitry with his transmitter. He then turned and stepped out onto the thick carpet. "We're here to speak with Min Corio," Cascio announced mundanely. The woman eyed them suspiciously, particularly Pitt, and opened a leather-bound journal. "I see nothing in Madame Bougainville's schedule that shows any appointments this evening." Cascio's face furrowed into his best hurt look. "Are you sure?" he asked, leaning over the desk and peering at the appointment book. She pointed at the blank page. "Nothing is written in." Cascio chopped her across the nape of the neck with the edge of his palm, and she fell forward, head and shoulders striking the desktop. Then he reached inside her blouse and extracted a vest pocket 25-caliber automatic pistol. "Never know it to look at her," he explained, "but she's a security guard." Cascio tossed the gun to Pitt and took off down a corridor hung with paintings of the Bougainville Maritime Fleet. Pitt recognized the pilot town, and his weary expression hardened. He followed the brawny private investigator up an intricately carved rosewood circular staircase to the living quarters above. At the top of the landing, Cascio met another ravishing Asian woman who was leaving a bathroom. She was wearing silk lounging pajamas with a kimono top. Her eyes widened, and in a lightning reflex, she lashed out with one foot at Cascio's groin. He anticipated the thrust and shifted his weight ever so slightly, catching the blow on the side of his thigh. Then she flashed into the classic judo position and hurled several rapid cuts at his head. She would have done more damage to an oak tree. Cascio shook off her attack, crouched and sprung like an offensive back coming off the line. She spun to her left in an impressive display of feline grace, but was knocked off balance by his shoulder. Then Cascio straightened and smashed through her defense with a vicious left hook that nearly tore off her head. Her feet left the floor, and she flew into a 5-foot-high Sung Dynasty vase, breaking it into dust. "You certainly have a way with women," Pitt remarked casually. "Lucky for us, there's still a few things we can do better than they can." Cascio motioned toward a large double door carved with dragons and quietly opened it. Min Corio was propped up in her spacious bed, browsing through a pile of audit reports. For a moment, the two men stood mute and unmoving, waiting for her to look up and acknowledge their intrusion. She looked so pathetic, so fragile, that any other trespassers might have wavered, but not Pitt and Cascio. Finally, she lifted her reading glasses and gazed at them, showing no apprehension or fright. Her eyes were fixed in frank curiosity. "Who are you?" she asked simply. "My name is Sal Cascio. I'm a private investigator." "And the other man?" Pitt stepped from the shadows and stood under the glow from the spotlights above the bed. "I believe you know me." There was a faint flicker of surprise in her voice, but nothing else.
"Mr. Dirk Pitt?"
"Yes."
"Why have you come?"
You are a slimy parasite who sucked the life out of untold innocent people to build your filthy empire. You're responsible for the death of a personal friend of mine and also for that of Sal's daughter. You tried to kill me, and you ask why I'm here? You are mistaken, Mr. Pitt. I am guilty of nothing so criminal. My hands are unstained. A play on words. You live in your museum of Oriental artifacts, shielded from the outside world, while your grandson did your dirty work for you. You say I am the cause of your friend's death? She was killed by the nerve agent you stole from the government and left on the pilot town. I'm sorry for your loss, she said gently. The politeness and sympathy were without a trace of irony. And you, Mr. Cascio, how am I to blame for your daughter? She was murdered along with the crew of the same ship, only then it was called the San Marino. Yes, I recall, said Mincorio, dropping all pretense. The girl with the stolen money. Pitt stared into the old woman's face, examining it. The blue eyes were bright and glistening, and the skin was smooth, with only a bare hint of aging lines. She must have truly been a beautiful woman once. But beneath the veneer, Pitt detected ugliness, a cesspool locked in ice. There was a black malignity inside her that filled him with contempt. I suppose you've smashed so many lives, he said, you've become immune to human suffering. The mystery is how you got away with it for so long. You have come to arrest me? She asked. No, Cascio answered stonily. To kill you. The piercing eyes blazed briefly. My security people will come through the door any second. We've already eliminated the guard at the receptionist's desk and the one outside your door. As to others, Cascio paused and pointed a finger at a TV camera mounted above her bed. I've reprogrammed the tapes. Your guards at the monitors are watching whatever occurred in your bedroom a week ago last night. My grandson will hunt you both down, and your punishment will not be quick. Li Tong is dead, Pitt informed her, relishing every syllable. The face altered. Now the blood flowed out of it, and it became a pale yellow. But not with the emotions of shock and hurt, Pitt thought. She was waiting, waiting for something. Then the flicker of expectancy vanished as quickly as it had come. I do not believe you, she said at last. He sank with the laboratory barge after I shot him. Cascio moved around to the side of the bed. You must come with us now. May I ask where you're taking me? The voice was still soft and gracious. The blue eyes remained set. They didn't notice her right hand move beneath the covers. Pitt never really accounted for the instinctive move that saved his life. Maybe it was the sudden realization that the TV camera was not exactly shaped like a camera. Maybe it was the complete absence of fear in Mincorio, or the aura that she was in firm command. But as the beam of light stabbed out from above her bed, he pitched himself to the floor. Pitt rolled to his side, tugging the automatic from his coat. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw the laser beam sweep the room, cutting through furniture, scorching the draperies and wallpaper with a needle-thin spear of energy. The gun was in his hands, blasting away at the electron amplifier. At his fourth shot, the beam blinked out. Cascio was still standing. He reached out toward Pitt and then stumbled and fell. The laser had cut through his stomach as neatly as a surgeon's scalpel. He twisted over on his back and stared up. Cascio was seconds away from death. Pitt wanted to say something, but he couldn't get the words out. The case-hardened old investigator raised his head. His voice came in a rasping whisper.
The elevator. Code 4116.
And then his eyes went sightless and his breathing ceased. Pitt took the transmitter from Cascio's pocket, rose and trained the automatic just 10 inches from Mincorio's heart. Her face was locked in a fearless smile. Then Pitt lowered the gun and reached under the covers and silently lifted her out of the bed into her wheelchair. She made no move to resist, spoke no words of defiance. She sat, wizened and mute, as Pitt pushed her into the corridor and onto a small lift that lowered them to the office floor. When they reached the reception lobby, she noted the unconscious security guard and looked up at him.
What now, Mr. Pitt?
The final curtain for Bougainville Maritime, he said. Tomorrow your rotten business will be no more.
Your Oriental art objects will be given away to museums. A new tenant will come in and redecorate your offices and living quarters. In fact, your entire fleet of ships will be sold off. From now on, the name of Bougainville will be nothing but a distant memory in newspaper microfilm files. No friends or relatives will mourn you, and I'll personally see that you're buried in a potter's field with no marker. At last he had broken through, and her face revealed a searing hate.
And your future, Mr. Pitt?
He grinned. I'm going to rebuild the car you blew up. She weakly lifted herself from the wheelchair and spat at him. Pitt made no move to wipe away the spittle. He simply stood there and grinned wickedly, looked down and saw the evil viciousness erupt as she cursed him in Korean. Pitt pressed the code numbers Cassio had given him into the transmitter and watched as the doors to Liftonic QW607 opened. But there was no elevator, only an empty shaft. Bon voyage, you diabolic old crone. Then he shoved the wheelchair into the vacant opening and stood listening as it clattered like a pebble down a well, echoing off the sides of the shaft until there was the faint sound of impact 100 stories below. Lauren was sitting on a bench in the concourse as he came through the main door of the Trade Center. She came toward him and they met and embraced. They clung together without saying anything for a few moments. She could feel the fatigue and the pain in him. And she sensed something more. A strange inner peace that she had never known was there. She kissed him lightly several times. Then she took his arm and led him to a waiting taxi.
Sal Cascio, she asked.
With his daughter.
And Min Corio Bougainville?
In hell. She caught the distant look in his eyes.
You need rest. I'd better check you into a hospital.
Suddenly the old devilish look flashed on his face. I had something else in mind.
What?
The next week in a suite in the best hotel in Manhattan. Champagne, gourmet dinners sent up by room service, you making love to me. A coquettish expression gleamed in her eyes.
Why do I have to do all the work?
Obviously, I'm in no condition to take command. She held on to him comfortingly.
I suppose it's the least I can do after you saved my life.
Semper paratus, he said.
Semper what?
The Coast Guard motto, always ready. If their rescue helicopter hadn't arrived over the barge when it did, we'd both be lying on the bottom of the Gulf of Mexico. They reached the taxi, and Lauren held on to Pitt as he stiffly entered and sank into the seat. She eased in beside him and kissed his hand while the driver sat patiently looking out his windshield.
Where to? The driver asked.
The Helmsley Palace Hotel, Pitt answered. Lauren looked at him.
You're getting a suite at the Helmsley, she said.
A penthouse suite, he corrected her.
And who's going to pay for this opulent interlude?
Pitt looked down at her in mock astonishment.
Why, the government, of course. Who else?
This concludes the reading of Deep Six by Clive Cussler. This book was read by Michael Pritchard.